Priority 1 message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 43, featuring the top five bottle shows. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, our topic is going to see us playing with bottles.
It is exactly as they left it, number one, in the bottle. Ship in the bottle. Oh, good Lord. Didn't anybody here build ships in bottles when they were boys?
I did not play with toys.
I was never a boy.
No. Very good. Well, we're not playing with ships in bottles, but tonight we're playing with bottle shows on Star Trek. So what is a bottle show? Well, I think a lot of Star Trek fans, I think, know that a bottle show is kind of a lean, budget-conscious episode of Star Trek in terms of production. But we're going to get into all the specifics of that in a minute here in our diagnostic cycle. So, but first, I want to introduce our guest before we get into that minutia, because it gets a little complicated on defining a bottle show. All right, so tonight we figured we'd have our own version of a bottle show by bringing back two of our regular guest hosts. They are the great Claire Little and Mr. Ken Riley, two regular contributors, not only to our show here, but also to our friends over at TrekCore, the premier Star Trek resource site in existence in the interwebs. Claire and Ken, are you guys there?
Yes.
I'm here. Good evening.
Welcome back to Trek Ranks.
Happy to be back again.
This is Claire's fifth appearance, I think. And
it's fourth or fifth?
Fifth. Let's see. I got my notes here. Prime Directive, series premieres, Doppelgangers, Mount Rushmore.
Oh.
And Ken did Time Travel, Doppelganger, Scenes in a Jefferies too. So it's Ken's fourth. But I think this might be our first duplicate show in terms of, since you guys were both on Doppelgangers together. Anyway, whatever. Who cares?
That is in itself a doppelganger.
That is a doppelganger.
Pew, pew, pew.
Fire those defiant torpedoes. All right, let's run through our quick Trek Ranks recalibration before we get into tonight's topic. As regular listeners will know, general order number one here at the Trek Ranks Podcast is that we love Trek, and we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics just to get the conversation started, because quite literally, my favorite thing to do is to talk about Star Trek, and that is why this podcast exists.
But what is that Vulcan motto? Infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
Hmm. And what is diversity? But a celebration of differences.
And as T'Pol and Dr. Phlox just said, our mantra here at Trek Ranks is no wrong answers. Trek Ranks is basically just a big old celebration of differences. So our show is about all the reasons we love Trek. We're not here to nitpick or to argue, but just to celebrate the greatness of Trek. We love it all from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline, and of course, Discovery now as well. It's all fair game here on the Trek Ranks Podcast. And just a reminder that we use the term episodes as our quick shorthand phrase, but obviously the 13 films are always in play as well, so it's easier to refer to episodes as a catch-all.
Open hailing frequencies.
Hailing frequencies open.
On viewer.
And if you would like to contact Trek Ranks, the best way to do that is to find us on Twitter at Trek Ranks or me directly at Enterprise Extra. You can also call and leave us a message with your own picks at 609-512-LLAP. That's 609-512-5527. And for those of you enjoying all of our shows here on the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network, you can support us via Patreon at patreon.com/the Tricorder Transmissions. All right, let's check in with our guests so they can let everyone know how they can get a hold of them as well. Claire, how can people get a hold of you?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is at isolinearchick, C-H-I-C-K, not chip, C-H-I-P.
Perfect. And Ken?
Well, you can catch me and the rest of the team from TrekCore at TrekCore.com and both on Twitter and Facebook at TrekCore.
Perfect. Okay, I think we're ready to activate our level one diagnostic.
Diagnostic cycle will be complete in 20 seconds.
So for this week's diagnostic cycle, I'm going to take a moment here just to break down how bottle shows have been defined through the years. So as a starting point, if you don't know, a bottle show, like I said earlier, is a reference to a show that is really budget-friendly. And they're usually born out of budget shortcomings within the show. So they come maybe later in a season or before some big epic episodes. And it's when the creatives around a show really need to come up with a way to tell a story and not spend a lot of money. The number one thing that a bottle show is basically referencing is just keeping everything on standing sets or inside the bottle. So no location shoots or elaborate set builds, that kind of thing. And then when it comes to saving money, a bottle show is also about three key areas of storytelling. So it was really been well-defined by Ronald D. Moore and Mike Okuda over the years, who we've seen quoted many times, basically saying that a bottle show is when you're shooting everything on the standing sets with a minimal guest cast and minimal new visual effects shots. So let me say that again, just so we have it. The three key criteria here are everything on standing sets with a minimal guest cast and minimal new visual effects shots. So based on that criteria, I think that pretty much eliminates any Discovery episodes, unless you want to maybe pick a Discovery short trek, because Runaway and Calypso could potentially classify if you go that route. And of course, the point here on Trek Ranks is there's no wrong answers. So we're going to spend the next segment of the show defining how we're going to pick our bottle shows and how we defined them, because really you can pick any episode you want. That's all we want to do on Trek Ranks is talk about Trek. So let's do that now. We'll jump into our prime directive and see exactly how everybody here defined a bottle show related to our picks.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our prime directive.
Define prime directive.
All right, Claire, let's start with you. What was your prime directive in defining a bottle show based on that criteria and how stringent, how did you look at it?
I had a really hard time with this one because bottle show, I know you just defined it, but there are like three episodes of Star Trek maybe that are true bottle shows.
I had the kind of same realization.
Yeah. And then if you want to go broader than that, I kept thinking of episodes that I sort of think of as bottle shows. But then when I really thought about, oh, no, there's some major new effects or there's 1 2-minute scene that they're outside. It's, some on location shot somewhere. Oh, dang it. Or there's a guest star who is the plot revolves around a guest star. OK, well, obviously that's not going to work. I mean, the episode of Star Trek with bottle in its name doesn't even work. I mean, it's about a ship in a bottle and it doesn't even work if you want to get really technical about it. So I had a hard time and I am actually still thinking of one of my picks.
If it revolving around the guest cast, though, that wouldn't be a criteria because you could if the creators are getting clever and they spend their money on one guest star and build a show around them with everything else intact. I think the key word is, I kept having to remind myself, is minimal guest cast, minimal visual effect.
Right.
Which is the quote Ron Moore.
There are so many recurring characters, like DS9. I'm sorry. There's the promenade with the amount of makeup required to put heads on all those aliens. And then it's got such a rich set of recurring characters. They're not regulars, but they are characters who show up in, a quarter of the episodes, a third of the episodes.
It's not an easy, clean delineation. No. Ken, how about you? How did you look at it?
Well, for the most part, I stuck to the same kind of rule that you originally described for the producers there, Jim. But, I did allow a little more leeway for guest stars based on their involvement in the episode, based on if they were playing a human or some complicated alien that might cost more to create in production. And I may have to challenge your exclusion of Discovery without spoiling anything.
Okay. All right. Maybe I didn't think about it that hard. I just thought about it in terms of they probably aren't, but challenge away. We love it. All right, so on my list, I was the same. I kept calling it like pure. Like, what's a pure bottle show with no standing sets, no extra sets, no guest cast, no visual effects, and I could not find very many. It's going to be interesting to see if we landed on the same ones in that regard, or, I mean, there's 700 plus episodes of Trek, so it's, we could have easily missed something or not considered something that happens all the time here. So yeah, I went for as pure as I could get, but in some places I had to take that minimal into consideration. So this is going to be fun. I have a feeling we're going to talk about some episodes that we haven't really tackled before on Trek Rank. So looking forward to that. Third Emoticon, let's get into this. Let's talk about the order of things.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
And just a quick reminder on how we're going to go through the order of things. First, each of us will reveal our original Trek Ranks 5 words and a hashtag summary to tease our pick. That is, if everybody has them. If not, Claire, it's okay.
No, I do now.
Then we'll reveal our bottle show episode title and we'll discuss why we picked it. And at the end, we'll rattle off a few secondary system picks of some choices that may have just missed our list. And as always, if we have any duplicates tonight, you'll know it when you hear the Defiant Torpedoes. Okay, Claire, let's start with you. What's your number 5 pick for your top 5 bottle show?
All right. My number 5 pick is a show that I don't think has probably ever come up on Trek Ranks before. But, you know, it's no, you can't talk about bottle episodes without talking about Shades of Grey. This episode does suck pretty hard, but it actually is a bottle show in the strictest sense of the term. But simultaneously, it also is the only episode that has both Dr. Pulaski and Dr. Crusher in it. It's, I think, the episode of TNG to feature all regular cast members, including Tasha Yar. So by virtue of being a clip show, you can kind of get away with some things that a regularly produced show would not do. I also think it's kind of amazing that it's a season finale episode, considering how bad and lazy it is. But this was before the idea of like an exciting cliffhanger was a thing, but it's still sort of ballsy to end your series on Shades of Grey, or your season.
Well, it's clearly a bottle show in terms of they were trying to save money and ran out of money and had no other options.
Yeah, they shot it in 3 days.
Yeah. And so this is I thought about this one, but then I ruled it out. And this is going to happen throughout this episode, I think, because of that. I actually really like that set at the beginning of the episode where they're on the planet and Riker gets zapped by the thorn.
Yeah, but
I thought they did a really good job. They had running water. I mean, it just felt like that's why I eliminated it. But it's definitely a bottle show.
But it's a standing set. It's like the cave set.
Yes. Fair enough. Yeah,
it's Planet Hell, right?
Yeah. No, that's fair for sure.
But and it's also a dressing of Planet Hell that you've seen before.
Yep. I just like that they spent all that money on the creek running through there. Yeah.
You really felt like you were out there in nature, huh?
Exactly. Ken, what's your take on Shades of Grey? I think this might have had a previous mention, but I can't remember.
Well, it's obviously a forced budget saver. They were at the end of the season. The writer's strike in 1980 kicked in, so they were forced to just throw something together because they had to close out the end of the production season. What sets are in that aside from the planet? Sick bay, and do they even go to the bridge? I don't even remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the bridge is in there for at least one talk back.
Yeah, and that's probably it then. I mean, you know, you have that weird contraption that Pulaski puts around Riker's head that spikes him and flashes back to the first two seasons of the show. It's really great. I mean, there's some good Elkar's medical graphics there on some of the sickbay screens that they show, and that were kind of done in a nice way, remastered on Blu-ray. But aside from that, there's really no visual effects aside from, I guess there was a phaser blast on the planet and some transporter effects, but that's pretty much it.
All right. Shades of Grey is how we kick off our bottle show episode. I love it.
I did my homework on this. I actually have 5 words and hashtags.
Oh yeah. What's your, let's hear it.
I'm good at not doing those. my 5 words are keep this bottle corked tight. And my hashtag is reduce, reuse, and recycle.
That is perfect, and a perfect way to start the Bottle Show episode of Trek Ranks with Shades of Grey. All right, Ken, what's your number five pick?
All right, my number five pick, five words are victory on a biosurvey mission, hashtag o'clock. It's Dramatis Persona from Deep Space Nine.
All right, that is great. I was wondering where you were going on that.
So this one, it takes place entirely on the station. There's no external standing sets used. There's three, I would call them guest characters. There's Bajoran, there's a Klingon, so both cheap off-the-shelf makeups that they've just probably reused old appliances for. There's a single two-second shot of a ship exploding that I think might be either a reuse or at least it's a recomposite from something else. And two of the alien appearances are just people on a view screen, so they didn't even have to complete a set, just a backdrop and give them a decent-looking shirt to go with their alien makeup.
Fantastic pick. This was on my secondary systems.
It's one that people don't talk about much since it's so early in the run of DS9 before things really became serialized in the ongoing storyline. But I think all the cast does a great job. Even the Bashir character, which, you know, first season Bashir is no one's favorite.
Right.
Really, you know, gets that deviousness to him from the telepathic alien invasion. And I don't know, it's one of my favorites from the early run of DS9.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's total scene chewing by all the actors, especially it's like the first time where Avery Brooks as Sisko is really just sinking his teeth into it. I actually really like this episode. I think it's a classic. Definitely the first time mentioned on Trek Ranks. Claire, what's your take on
Dramatis Personae?
Dramatis Personae.
It's a great episode, and I'm like bummed I didn't think of it. I had such a hard time with this topic, and now I'm like, oh, that's an easy one and a good one. I love, by the way, that the clock stays in Sisko's office throughout the rest of the show.
Yes, that was a great touch.
It's really cool. Too.
It really is. Great, great prop. Okay, my number five pick to close out the first round here is five words and a hashtag, another computer in Kirk's crosshairs, hashtag sterilize. It is the Changeling from TOS season 2, number 29 for me at Trek Ranks. And this is one of my two or three picks here. I think two picks that I'm labeling as a 100% pure Bottle Show, because there's no extra sets, there's no crazy special effects. They basically just have one voice actor playing Nomad, and of course they have the Nomad model floating around on a string and being shot kind of tricky. So I love this episode. I've always loved this since I was a little kid, and I think it's like one of the half dozen or so episodes, obviously, where Kirk talks a computer into destroying itself. But it's fantastic. And yeah, James Roy Kirk, the whole bit. I love the action here. I love the pacing, and I love when they blow up Nomad. Ken, what's your take on the Changeling?
It's a good inexpensive pick for sure. There are, I mean, aside from, you know, the different zapping effects from the Nomad probe, and I guess there's probably a red shirt or two that bites it, there really isn't too many other visual effects. I mean, from as much as you would classify the original series as visual effects, I think you're right.
And there's like one ship shot and there's a few phaser shots.
Yeah, and the only people that really have long-term effects from it, I guess, are Scotty from being tossed over the railing and Uhura from losing her memory, which they have back by next week. So we're all good in the end.
Ball. Claire, what's your take?
Another great episode. Yeah, I try not to think too hard about the actual logistics of Uhura relearning multiple languages and
okay, here's my head canon on that is that he blocked her neurons from like instant access to those memories, and she was relearning how to access that part of her brain.
Okay.
Boom, solved.
So she just needed a reboot is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, my brain is just a big fancy computer.
Yeah. Well, And I like that they apparently have like Dick and Jane books in the
yes, yes. Ball. Okay, that closes out round five. I love those initial picks. Claire, what's your number four pick?
Okay, my number four pick is definitely a cheat. The CGI rules this one out immediately, but otherwise I think it totally passes. My five words are spheroid region, 705 meters diameter. My hashtag is maybe there's something wrong with the universe. And my pick is Remember Me from TNG.
I love it. This was on my secondary system.
It is? Okay. From a production perspective, it may not really be a bottle episode, but if at some point the universe is small enough such that the only thing in the universe is the eyes, that's a bottle. I'm sorry.
Agreed. I agree. I think this is a bottle episode. You got a couple of guest stars.
Yeah.
And a minimal visual effect.
Right. Conceptually, it's a bottle episode. Production, as far as I don't know how much the CGI costs to do. You know, I don't know if the production side would consider it to be a bottle episode. That said, I want to say I did look at the bottle episode entry on Memory Alpha, and there are some definitely not bottle shows on that list. So
I noticed that too.
Yeah, like Lower Decks is not a bottle episode. It's got a whole bunch of guest stars.
there were some worse ones than that too.
Oh yeah,
because Lower Decks you can at least argue. No, you can't argue Lower Decks because the whole show is.
Is about other characters. Yeah. Duet is not a bottle show because, like, yeah, it's on standing sets, but I mean.
Yeah, but so Duet is, that one's, I think Duet is because it's one guest star.
But the whole episode is about that.
Yeah, but that's not part of, well, listen, everybody can pick whatever you want, but.
Yeah.
You know, the criteria that's been defined by the production has nothing to do with the content of the show.
Right, but that the guest star is on set and because they have more to record, so that means they cost more.
Well, one thing, and now we're getting into I should have mentioned this in the diagnostic cycle, but I was also thinking, I think part of the thing for the production team too is, and why Deep Space Nine might not be that reflected on this episode, but maybe should have, is I think part of the bottle show mentality too is what they have in the budget.
Yeah.
So if for every episode of DS9, you have X dollars budgeted for all these extras to be walking around the promenade, then that's not part of the budget show equation. It's what you would be paying above and beyond that, if that makes sense.
That's true.
But who knows? We're getting into the weeds. But I let's get back to Remember Me, which
okay.
is an awesome pick. And poor Dr. Quaise.
Yeah. And poor Dr. Crusher, although I will say I do really appreciate the sort of the fact that Dr. Crusher is basically losing her mind, or thinks she is. Well, she's spouting crazy talk. But her colleagues are like, okay, we'll look into it.
For sure they did. Ken, what's your take on Remember Me?
I would say this is definitely a bottle episode.
Yay.
Yep.
Only shots of outside the Enterprise are the reuse of the Starbase 47 entry from the season one, which was itself, you know, pulled from Star Trek 3. The onset effects is just a big wheel with a bunch of spinning lights on it and a wind machine. And the only, I think, new set they would have built is that partial recreation of the bridge helm console on its side. So there's almost no cost for new production.
I love that you know that. That's how they shot that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course they did. Yeah.
And, you know, I think in terms of, you know, Claire, what you mentioned is CGI. I mean, it's mostly just a dissolve to a blue cloud. There's not really much going on there.
That's true.
In terms of digital effects, except for...
Yeah, that might have been the wrong term. But, like, this Crusher has to do some stunts and...
That's true. And there were some digital burn-ins, you know, on the displays of all the warp bubbles and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And of course, the Traveler shows up at the end.
Right. But his makeup, you know, had already been designed. They already had cast his face and head, so they really
good point. Good point. Well, it's definitely a bottle show. Okay, let's move on to Ken's number four pick. What do you got, Ken?
All right, for my number four pick, my five words are: he looks exactly like me. Hashtag computer, is this me? It's projections from Voyager.
Yes. So close. This is my toughest cut. I was so close to including this. I'm so glad you picked it.
So this falls into your criteria of no new construction and end of the season, because even though it aired as part of one of the early season two episodes, it was filmed during the production run of Voyager's first season and helped.
I forgot that.
So it's definitely near the end where the money's running tight. So they spent all their money on Dwight Schultz guest starring as Barkley and a bunch of hologram dissolves throughout the episode. They might have had to spend some money on recreating some of the damage from the caretaker pilot when they do a flashback to the injured crew. But aside from that, there's two phaser beams. There's a nameless Kazon and a bunch of VFX stock shots of the Voyager ship. And that's pretty much it.
I love this pick. It's totally a bottle show. Totally agree. And yeah, it was really close to picking it. It's just an awesome episode. It's one of those ones where no matter how many times I watch it, I always kind of forget kind of how it's going to play out and what the end game is. It's pretty pretty tricky.
Yeah, and all the regulars even have something to do, even if it's for just a mm-hmm. scene or two, which I had kind of forgotten about until I watched again last night.
Yeah, Claire, what's your take on projections?
Love it. Again, it's one of those episodes that I considered, but because of Barkley, I felt like I couldn't include it. I think I just got really like stuck on the
guest star
rules.
That's good though. That means we're going to have different picks and different perspective. I love it.
Yeah. I think I ended up with some with decent picks, but yeah, this is a great choice.
Well, so far your picks are awesome. All five picks are awesome. Let's go to my number four pick and my five words and a hashtag. Spooky tone works really well. Hashtag one bridge, one Riker, one bridge. And it is Where Silence Has Lease.
Oh, no.
TNG season two. And again, this is another episode I love. It's actually ranked pretty high on Trek Race, number 53. And so minus a few effect shots and shooting the actor Earl Bowen, who played Nagilum, this is pretty close to a pure bottle show. It's a great mystery. It's got this really weird tone. And I love the use of the Enterprise bridge in kind of a dual capacity. And Nagilum, come on. That is a creepy, cool, cheap alien design that really gave me the creeps when this episode first aired. And I love the clever script and, you know, a little bit got some good Picard speechifying about death and, you know, a little bit of the Trek morality tale there. So I love it. It's a fun episode. Claire, what's your take on Where Silence Has Lease?
Yeah, it's a strong early episode for Picard, just like very kind of classic Picard. At the time, I have no idea how much that CG effect for Nagilum cost, but I'll tell you that in 2018, it looks like they didn't have to spend very much money.
I love that effect. I think it's really creepy. Like, clearly there's an alien trying to recreate a human face. And it's
yeah, I mean, creepy. if they had improved it for the Blu-ray release, I would have been disappointed. I mean, I poke fun at it, but I don't actually want it to change.
But if you look at some of the bonus features on the season two Blu-rays, you can see the alternate versions of Nagilum, which are even weirder.
Yes, that's actually true. And, you know, I love the trivia fact that Nagilum was supposed to be the actor Richard Mulligan, which is
from Empty Nest.
Right. From Empty Nest and other great comedies. I don't think it, I feel like it wouldn't have worked with him. So I'm glad. But anyway, Nagilum is Mulligan spelled backwards. So I was also going to mention that there's a great, this is like peak Ron Jones score as well with the eerie space music beats.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't love that.
I mean, Ron Jones is probably at the bottom in terms of my favorite Trek composers, but sometimes it really works. And I think it works here too. Also, Winrich Colby's first ever directing episode for Trek. So, Ken, any other thoughts on Where Silence Has Lease?
What else can I say?
We're editing it all out. We're editing it all out.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's a fun episode. I mean, you get some good physical bits with, Pulaski getting, shocked around the bridge and spinning around the room. And, you know, the infamous ensign with his head exploding in his hands.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Riker at the end trying to shut down the self-destruct. Absolutely, I agree. Wholeheartedly, shut it down.
10 seconds to auto-destruct.
Captain. Abort. Auto-destruct sequence.
Riker William T., do you concur?
Yes, absolutely. I do indeed concur wholeheartedly.
Auto-destruct. Canceled.
Simple yes would have sufficed, number one. I didn't want there to be any chance of misunderstanding. Of course.
That's always funny, but aside from that, you know, it's definitely a budget saver, you know, especially because I'm trying to remember when in the season we actually get to see the real Yamato, but it's destroyed later in
Contagion. Yeah, a few episodes later. Yeah,
that's right. So a minor bit of continuity for those early days of TNG.
Yeah, this was right at the beginning of season two, so it occurred really, really early. It's like the second episode of the season. All right, let's move to the soup round. And Claire, what is your number three pick?
5 words, clip show that works brilliantly. So I'm going with Menagerie. This is the antithesis of Shades of Grey. And I wouldn't normally call Menagerie a clip show, by the way, but for continuity and callback, I am. I mean, on one hand, the entire runtime of the two episodes is, you know, set and actors and effects that they had to pay for. But, you know, by the time they got around to making the Menagerie, they were just trying to reuse the money they had already poured into the cage, which was the first pilot, obviously. But it's, you know, instead of, unlike Shades of Grey, it's not a bland retread. They ended up making a very coherent original story that ends up being one of the, generally considered one of the best episodes of the original series. It won a award for science fiction for that year. So I guess it's kind of a cheat because all of the footage that you see was filmed and paid for and intended to not look like a bottle show.
But it's totally not a cheat. This is a brilliant pick. I hadn't thought of this one. But other than Commodore Mendez as a...
Yeah, there's some minor guest actors. Commodore, not to call you minor, but, you know, no alien makeups. And not they're not... Those characters are not central to the plot. The one thing that makes this a little bit of a cheat is that apparently it took 5 hours for Captain Pike's makeup to get applied every day, which is kind of, I don't know what they were doing with those 5 hours because it's not that good.
But it's definitely budget conscious. And across two episodes they were, and we know what, you know, the reason they made this. And by the way, this is one of the all time great episodes of Trek. And it's one of the reasons Star Trek has lasted 52 years. I've said this before, but because of what Gene Roddenberry saw in building his world with this episode. I mean, can you imagine? This is 10 episodes into Star Trek. Can you imagine watching this on TV and being like, where is all this other stuff coming from? How did they do this? It's truly amazing.
And the ability to build and not just coherent, but genuinely good episode.
So good.
Around another episode of television. Like, that is hard.
Yeah, it's amazing. Cam, what's your take on this pick?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's generally a bottle episode. I would be curious to know how we factor in the construction for the Starbase sets. Because there's a computer room, there's...
But I feel like that was just the repackaging the engineering, right?
A lot of it was. I actually looked this up before.
Okay.
The Menagerie, most of it was redressed, but not all of it. And the parts that were not redressed were small, like, you know, a third of a room kind of sets.
Yeah, it's like there was an office and then there was like that one engineering.
Yeah. The matte painting.
Where they beamed down. That's just the corner of the wall and the Whitlock painting. You're right.
Yeah. The matte painting was created for the Menagerie, but it ended up being reused later on. So they recouped their money later on it.
No, this was definitely a budget conscious episode. And,
for sure.
And inspired. I love this pick because I did not think of it. Awesome. All right, Cam, what's your soup round pick?
All right. My 5 words for this round 3 pick are dance with me for science. Hashtag murder montage.
Oh.
Magic to make the sanest man go mad from Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
All right. You just proved me wrong. That's brilliant. I love it.
All right. And here's how I'm justifying this pick.
Okay.
Obviously, we have one big guest star with Rainn Wilson coming back for his second trip as Harry Mudd. And there's a lot of visual effects. You know, we've got a lot of phasers and transporters and the ship blowing.
Got a Gormagander.
That too, absolutely, that big freaking space whale. But the reason why I think this can count towards this topic is because back in the spring, when producers were on their sort of spring press tour, they in public said this episode was designed as a time loop because they were, quote, desperate to save money.
Okay, interesting. So this is a Discovery version of the Bottle Show.
Right, for as expensive as Discovery is, this is probably the cheapest one of the season. So, you know, it's all on the standing sets. There's no new construction. The big room where they have all the party had to redress the mess hall. They're in engineering. They're on the bridge. Everything that's been established in previous episodes. We have a beam in at the very end from Stella and her dad. But again, that's just a couple of humans. So yeah. No real cost there. And all things being said is, again, with expensive as Discovery is, this is probably the cheapest one that they could do to get the season moving along in the middle of the year.
I love it. It's a creative pick. I did not go that deep to think about it, but the background of it is awesome.
Plus, actually, there's one other thing I forgot. In the beginning of the episode, we have Burnham doing a personal log talking about how she's fitting in on the ship and getting ready for the party. And everything, all the scenes during that montage are, I believe, they're unused footage from other scenes in other episodes of the season. Of her being in the science lab or being
in right. That makes sense.
Seems like it's new, but it's just cut from the other episodes.
So it's actually, this is Discovery's clip show, is what you're saying.
For about 30 seconds. For about 30 seconds, yeah.
All right, I just want to highlight, too, I love that your Fiverr and hashtag highlighted that dance, because it's really, if you haven't rewatched this episode yet and you've seen it, rewatch it, because what they've built in terms of that story with centered around Stamets convincing Burnham to help him around that dance scene in the corridor is really special and really well done. Claire, what's your take on magic to make the sanest man go mad?
So I didn't think of it initially while I was doing my choices, but Ken, as soon as you said, oh, not necessarily, when Jim said there couldn't be any Discovery episodes, I zeroed in on this one and thought, if it's not this episode, then there's another episode of Discovery that I forgot about.
It's an awesome pick. I love it.
It is a good one.
All right. Let's close out the soup round with my number three pick. And it's actually another one from TNG season 2. So my five words and a hashtag: before we can go forward, hashtag the cycle must end. And it is Time Squared, which is a quality Bottle Show. The only thing on my end keeping this from being a 100% Bottle Show is maybe the visual effects shot of the Enterprise above the vortex when this is the one, by the way, where Picard meets his double from 6 hours in the future. But that's a minimal visual effects, I think, too. So other than that, there's no guest cast. There's no new sets in this one. I really love the pacing and the direction and the acting in this episode. And I think it's a really clever way to do time travel with just a one single six-hour time travel jump and how that kind of throws everything out of whack and makes them question themselves and not know if they should go forward, go backwards, and what's happening and how Picard reacts to it. So I love this episode. And I think the script is it's a Maurice Hurley script. It's really brilliant. And the direction for when the Picards are interacting with each other is just top notch. Ken, what's your take on Time Squared from TNG?
It made my secondary systems in terms of, a bottle episode generally. Again, the visual effects you mentioned make it a little bit difficult.
Minimal.
Yeah. but I don't know. It's never really been one of my favorite episodes. I don't know if it's just the long scenes with the duplicate Picard just lying there or
I love that kind of pacing. Or I love that old school pacing.
Speaking in gibberish or clearly a photo double with a bald cap on.
come now.
Hey, I'm not nitpicking. I'm telling you as it is. I don't know. I understood the episode, but I guess I never really got it. You know what I mean? So for me, it just, you know, if I'm doing a full series rewatch, I'll watch it, but I can't say I ever picked that episode to rewatch on its own.
I really appreciate the way the two Picards interact. And I will say once the other Picard kind of gets going, but I get it. Claire, what's your take on Time Squared?
I think it's a solid, like, season two episode. I didn't consider it, but I considered an episode with similar visual effects issues or requirements, which my thought was Brothers.
Oh, right, yeah.
Heavy makeup for Brent Spiner, but what really made me change my mind on it was all of the split screen, which I have no idea. I mean, I know that can be, at the very least, they have to be very careful about when they're filming. I don't know if it's necessarily expensive, but it requires, seems like it's easy to mess up and have to redo.
Well, I think it's time consuming that they were doing it with rotating angles and locking cameras and things. Whereas this one was like, it was pretty like old school, like Brady Bunch level camera split with like a line down the middle of the screen.
Yeah, you can see that one side of the screen is a little bit fuzzier because they've
broken.
Yeah. But I think the Time Squared, it's got more visual effects than just that opening scene you mentioned. I mean, there's like some sort of weird vortex out the shuttle bay hatch, mm-hmm. and there's some not face.
Similar. No, I mentioned that they show the vortex quite a few times, and then they have to dive through it.
Yeah,
there's also some the space lightning that it hits Picard.
That's what I was thinking of. That not a phaser, but yeah, space lightning.
The shuttle launch and the retrieval as well.
Yeah.
All minimal. All right. This topic is crazy. All right, let's go to round two. Claire, what's your number two pick?
So my number two pick is sort of related to Brothers, which I mentioned, in that it's got the same gimmick. My five words are too many Daks starring Smarf. # guests without guests, and this is Facets from DS9. So the episode Dax gets to meet her previous selves. Yes, it has Rom and Nog and Lita, and I had to just ignore that because otherwise I would go insane. I don't know if you could, but DS9 has just got such a big recurring but not regular cast. I don't know what you want to call them.
I think that's fair, and I'm going to say what I said before, that I think in their mindset, that's kind of built into their budget. I feel like this is a great bottle show pick. I didn't think of this one, but
it
fits every other category.
Well, yeah, like there's a very minor CGI on Odo when basically his spots show up,
mm-hmm.
but otherwise you're applying a slightly different makeup to an actor who gets a makeup applied to him every single day anyway when Odo becomes Curzon.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically a way to introduce 7 or 8 guest characters, if you consider Odo blended with Curzon to be another character distinct from Curzon, without having to hire 7 guest actors who are going to have at least one scene with a considerable number of lines.
Yeah.
And it's a cool episode. I mean, it's kind of all over the place, but I think it works. And you get the little bit with Nog trying to get into Starfleet Academy, which has nothing to do with the bottle show aspect, but it's the beginning.
I forgot. Yeah, that's part of this episode. Cam, what's your take on Facets?
I love a good Gintara. And yeah, this was one of my secondary systems as well. It's for all the reasons that, you know, you said, Claire, it's all the regular cast. And, you know, Nog and Lita and them, they're all in, you know, a couple of dozen episodes. So for Deep Space Nine, that's pretty much a regular cast member. They probably weren't contracted, but it's close enough for that series, I think.
Totally agree. I mean, that's built in for them. All right. Awesome pick. Ken, let's get your round two pick. What do you got?
Well, fire up those phasers. My five words are, there's nothing wrong with me. # something wrong with the universe. Remember me. That's right. We talked about it a lot, but it's one of my favorite Next Generation episodes. I probably watch it once every couple of months, and I just think it's great. It's cheap and it's fun, and it's a bottle episode for sure.
Wow, that's amazing. So you ranked this episode that high?
I did.
I know people do love this episode. I think it's more middling for me. I would put Times Squared ahead of it, but I do like the concept, and I'm a huge Traveler fan. So we didn't talk much about the Traveler. I love the Traveler.
I rank it so high mostly because, you know, of Gates McFadden's performance. Because the farther on the episode goes, the more irritated she gets with the computer, the more desperate she gets to save her day. And then she really kind of sorts out the whole problem on herself, which for the Crusher character, you don't get her seeing her doing pure science too often and really solve a mystery unless you want to count suspicions, which I don't think anybody wants to count suspicions.
That's fantastic. I love it. Claire, any final thoughts on Remember Me?
Just going back to what Ken said, like this episode really reminds you that she's a scientist and demonstrates why she's a commander.
View screen on. It's not just people. Everything is disappearing. Computer, what is that mist I'm seeing?
Sensors indicate it to be a mass energy field 705 meters in diameter.
It surrounds the ship.
Affirmative.
There's nothing wrong with me. Maybe there's something wrong with the universe.
Like, she is fully capable of figuring stuff out. And she knows the ship.
I love that. I love drawing attention to that because she really is a great character. I mean, obviously underserved, underutilized, but great, fantastic character. And Gates McFadden is amazing. So I'm adding to my rewatch list right now. Fantastic. Okay, let's close out round two with my number two pick. 5 words and a hashtag. Next level alternate reality storytelling. Hashtag champion standing. It is Parallels from TNG season 7. And minus a few visual effects shots, which are pretty impressive in this episode, but I don't think they were that difficult or expensive for them to really pull off. This one's really close to also being a kind of a pure bottle show. And obviously this is one of TNG's most popular episodes. Super fun watching Worf bounce around from timeline to timeline, celebrating his birthday, and we get, you know, characters showing up like Wesley pops up at the end. You got a Cardassian in Starfleet, which I love. So there's a bunch of cool elements, and it's really all just done with the main cast right there on the bridge with a few little resets. So, and I'm a huge fan of Worf and Troy. So sorry, not sorry. I think they are awesome together. Claire, what's your take on Parallels?
I love this episode. I am, every single time I watch it, though, I can't believe Klingons give out 9th place trophies.
I know, what a bunch of snowflakes.
I know, right? Like, that is something that humans would do.
That's like a participation award, 7th place.
That tells you right there that it's alternate reality, more than anything else.
Computer, access personal logs on shuttlecraft Curie. Show my log entry for Stardate 47391.2.
Personal log, Stardate 47391.2. I am returning from the Batleth competition on Forgus 3. The conditions were difficult. Several contenders were maimed. One of the contenders used an illegal Tikkah maneuver on me. The judges chose to ignore it, and I was robbed of my rightful standing. I was awarded 9th place. I am looking forward to resuming my duties aboard the...
No, this is a great episode. I also considered it, but because of the effects, I backed off.
Yeah, I feel like the only real effect is like them just layering in a bunch of Enterprises popping up on the screen.
Well, and there's a scene where he's in the shuttlecraft and you see, again, it's layers of like...
Yeah, they could do that in their sleep. That's definitely minimal. Ken, what's your take on parallels?
I don't know. I think at least half the budget was eaten up by Riker's beard in that Borg infested Enterprise.
Yeah.
But it was on my secondary systems too, but I didn't really rank it too highly for this specific topic because of not just the 285,000 Enterprises, but all the set dressing changes to the bridge and to some things in engineering and a lot of costume changes, which granted a lot of were probably just out of the ongoing wardrobe department. But I thought in the end it kind of would added up to a little bit more expensive of an episode than it seemed.
Minimal.
You're right. I'm so wrong.
I love this topic. All right, let's jump out of this timeline into our round one timeline and our number one picks for our top five bottle shows. Claire, what do you got?
So I wonder, since this particular episode has not been chosen yet, if we all chose it for our number one.
that would be a first. And yeah, it's possible.
It's possible.
Very possible. So I tell you what, let's do this. Ken, obviously, if it's your pick, jump in. And if it's not, then I'm going to jump in if it's my pick.
Okay.
I'm sure it's your pick, Tim.
All right, let's
see. I'm sure it's my pick, too.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay, Claire, what do you got?
My five words are Reed comes alive facing death, hashtag stinky, and my episode is Shuttle Pod 1 from Enterprise.
This is not my pick. Oh. This is not my pick either.
Okay, never
mind. But I thought it was with your first with your five words, not your hashtag.
I know what your
picks are. I know Jim and I are the same now.
Yeah, the first five words actually were matched up.
Yeah.
All right, let's do Shuttle Pod 1. I love it. Go.
Hashtag stinky, by the way, in case it's been a while since the listeners watched this episode. Reed has a fevered dream, and T'Pol calls him stinky in the dream for some reason. I don't know.
Nobody has forgotten that calls T'Pol stinky in Shuttle Pod 1. Okay. I want to forget it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want people to think I was saying the episode stunk because it doesn't. Very good episode.
Good clarification.
It's basically one of the bottlest of bottle shows. It's essentially a stage play. There are no guest stars. There are no extras. It takes place exclusively on existing sets. It's not a super original concept. It's the old two people stuck in a lifeboat together.
Yeah. Concept,
but I thought it was executed extremely well. And it was the first time that I really cared about Malcolm Reed as a character or felt like I knew him in any way. I know his character was always supposed to be difficult to know, but I didn't find him intriguing. I found him kind of unappealing. His character just never really worked for me, but this is one of the few times that it does. And the fact that he's able to hold his own against a super charismatic character in Trip is impressive. And it sets the tone for their friendship throughout the rest of the series. And it's a good one.
That's great. So I always say this about, not before I get into the episode, that I think Reed was kind of designed that way, which I get that
he was.
Some people don't. I feel like Reed is in the Bashir mode, and maybe the timing's not quite right, but where if Enterprise had gotten seven seasons, I think Reed was right on the point where in season 5, 6, 7, he was going to kind of blossom and be much more appreciated, because I think he was designed a little bit to be that kind of awkward, standoffish, kind of hard to connect with character.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't mind standoffish characters. And in fact, they can be really intriguing sometimes, but they kind of went in maybe too far with him or weird.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. I
didn't even know that he was in Shipped Out. I just was like, what?
Yep. Perfect example.
Is he a murderer? No.
So good. All right, Ken, what's your take on Shuttle Pod 1?
I'm just glad you didn't go with hashtag awfully nice bum. Yeah, this was really high on my secondary systems for Enterprise. At one point, I had almost had a list of five all Enterprise episodes, and this would have been right up there. And the one thing I'll say, with Enterprise especially, I give it more leeway when it comes to visual effects because of the transition to all CGI ships and just the evolution of technology over the 90s into the early 2000s. So, yeah, I mean, they're in an asteroid field and they're in a shuttle pod, you know, which is all new visual effect shots, I believe. But, you know, for the series itself, it really isn't anything too intense or too over the top to be dramatically expensive, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, but it's a great episode, and it certainly fits the bill.
Yep, no, for sure. It was definitely on my secondary systems. So let's jump into what I think Ken and I probably have as our number one pick, since we got teased a little bit there by Claire's pick. Ken, what's your number one pick?
My number one pick, as I think is probably predictable here, my five words are, our ancestors were physical beings. # someone always dies. It's observer effect from Enterprise.
Let me do my five words of the # which are jaw-dropping conclusion, links TOS, # someone always dies.
That's right.
This has to be.
This is, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's cheap. It's at the point where basically Enterprise was out of money because they knew they were in their last season and UPN wasn't going to give them any more cash. There's barely any extras, only because they have to have somebody in the background of the bridge, in the background of sick bay.
I hate those background guys in the bridge.
I know. They really are the worst.
So annoying.
You need those foreground guys in the bridge, right?
One time.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the rare episodes where there's not even a credited guest actor, even in the end credits, I don't think.
Nope.
It goes right from the episode title into the production credits, which I don't know if that's happened in any other episode.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Maybe one, an original series episode or something, but I can't think of one right now.
Wow. Well, the Changeling for sure would have been one, but that's a great, I didn't even realize it. It's probably the only one of since the original series to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and look that up. That's a great note.
It's also a really good Hoshi episode, which you don't think at first, but you get a lot of character from her.
Great Hoshi backstory.
Yeah. And her and Trip locked in a room for half the episode really gives them both some great interaction, which, you know, thinking of the early days of what Hoshi's character was like in the show, you probably wouldn't have thought possible based on where that character started.
No, I love that part of it too. But you're right. There's no guest stars, no new sets, no visual effects. For me, this is the most pure bottle show in Trek history. It might be the only one that really 100% by the strictest definition would be defined by it.
And it's a great episode. It's really good. It's so watchable.
Such a great, awesome mystery. It's number eight for me at Trek Ranks. I think it's amazing. And usually the Star Trek trope of aliens taking over a body or a spirit, or that's usually not one of my favorite things when they do that, but it works so well here, the way the two Arganians are bouncing around. So Claire, how about you? What's your take on observer effect?
Yeah, it's super impressive that production wise, one of the very last Star Trek episodes to do that trope of taking over, to actually be a really good one. I mean, how many times have we seen permutations on this?
So many.
Enterprise even did it themselves in the Crossing in the early episode, in the early days of the series.
Yeah. And for the payoff on this, like the last, I don't know, minute or two when it's revealed that they're Organians, it's the payoff is so good. The episode before then has been good as well. It's not like
right. It's
terrible up until the reveal. It's not. It's actually a really good episode, which is doubly impressive because it's a trope that's been done a lot in Star Trek.
Yeah, great, great, great point. I've said this many times. I literally fell out of my chair. Like I was watching this episode, and when they revealed that it was the Organians, I literally like fell forward onto my knees in front of the TV, like, because I love Aaron DeMarsh. And I was staring at the TV like, I mean, like I wanted to cry, like Organians, oh my goodness, this is amazing. It's a great script. Yeah. There's a great Archer speech at the end. This is a Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens script. It's genius.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because they were so late into production, into the season or what, but the fact that they didn't like sit there and explain who the Organians are or do a callback for something that's going to happen in the future. But they just were like, if you get it, you get it. If you understood what we were like for the significance of the Organians, that's great. If you don't, bye.
Yeah. And I think part of it was if you're still watching Enterprise at this point,
yeah,
you know who the Organians are. Right.
That is so true.
Yeah.
So true.
Of course, we were all watching, but we mean for the regular people out there.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, let's jump into some secondary systems picks. Claire, anything on the fringes for you?
Well, when you first asked me if I wanted to be on this show, the first episode that popped into my mind was Ship in a Bottle.
Oh, yeah.
An episode that is near and dear to my heart. I love some TNG era Barkley. Not to say that Voyager era Barkley isn't also good, but TNG is where it's at. But again, the number of guests, kind of, and the fact that there's the drawing room set on the holodeck.
Probably doesn't qualify, right?
No.
The one thing I didn't let impede my picks was if they had to build a set like that. Like you could get a little here or there on effects or a guest cast, but if they had to build a set, they kind of made it clear that that's.
And like that, the drawing room set and Ship in a Bottle, like, you know, all of the set dressing is just rented. I mean, it's a sort of generic Victorian drawing room. It's not particularly complex, but they did have to build it and dress it.
Yeah, still got to do it.
Another episode that I had to omit was Cause and Effect, because the floating Enterprise, just, you know, I don't think that was cheap.
They only blew it up once. So they just
showed they got to show it four times. So I was gonna say.
But they also had to, and then Kelsey Grammer, which he's on screen for like 30 seconds, so I was going to disregard him.
Yeah, but he probably cost a pretty penny.
It was just the reuse of the movie bridge in the background there too. So
right, but they did have to revamp the Reliant ship design or Miranda class ship design to be what is it? I don't remember what the class of the ship is that Kelsey Grammer
I know that it's not. It's Soyuz.
Yeah, and it's basically a Miranda class with like extra turrets and stuff on it. But they did have to do some work on it.
Right. Yeah, a little different than Miranda class. Yeah. I remember that because I was in a trivia contest and I missed Miranda class because I was thinking Soyuz.
Oh.
And it haunts me to this day.
It should. So
it does. Yeah. I got it flipped in my head. Shame. I'm cutting this out. I don't want anybody to know that fact. Okay. Ken, how about you? Any of your secondary systems picks?
Yeah, I had a lot of secondary picks.
Me too.
At first, I really kind of blew through it in a couple of minutes, but then I thought more and more about it. I just kept adding more to my list. From Enterprise, I really wanted to find a way to fit in Vox Sola.
Yep, that was on my list.
But the CG creature, and I just couldn't justify it from what I thought would be a cost perspective.
Same.
I'm really surprised no one picked Doctor's Orders from season 3. Because it's just a pole and Phlox and Porthos the whole episode.
I forgot about that. Isn't there some effects outside the ship, though?
They're just like in a nebula. It's basic.
So there's nothing like stuff clinging to the ship or anything?
No. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a redo of the Voyager episode 1.
Of course, yeah.
So that had more to it. Doctor's Orders was kind of, again, kind of late season 3, so they needed to save some money.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to find a way to fit Singularity from Enterprise in, but they built the galley set for that episode, and they reuse it a lot over the next couple of years, so that kind of made their money back. But then there was a whole nebula and asteroids and phaser battles that I couldn't pull it off.
Yeah, I eliminated that too.
From Next Generation, I tried to figure out a way to pull Genesis in to the list, but I the makeup effects couldn't pull it off. Yep. I didn't think it was a great episode. I said it, you know, it kind of fit.
Well, yeah, but I would say the makeup was
way too over the top.
Way too extensive. Even though that's technically not part of the definition as we described it, so maybe it does count. Yeah,
I had a lot of DS9 episodes that I was shuffling around. I had Visionary.
Yep, me too.
The Adversary, which kind of all takes place on the Defiant. But there's a lot of
CGI. I didn't count it because of the CGI.
The Assignment. But you know, there's a lot of ROM and engineering crew and Keiko in that, so I thought might add it up to a little bit of money.
Did you have Whispers? I had Whispers on mine.
I did not have Whispers because they had the alien cast at the end.
Yeah, but it's really just like that
in the cave.
It's that one cave set with the guy in like a really bad alien makeup from a distance.
I almost pulled Waltz into my list.
Oh yeah.
Because the guests are basically Dukat and Wayoon, who are basically regulars at that point.
Yeah.
The Brig and the Starship sets are Voyager swing sets. They use the TNG shuttle that they still have kicking around, and they basically in the cave set for the whole time. But
that's a good one. I didn't quite
pull it off. And then the last one from DS9 was the Sounder for Voice.
That's a great one.
Which was almost all the Defiant. And then the cave set.
They have a new shot though of that of the shuttle,
right? And that's why I had to rule it out because of that.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool shot. Very rare shot of a shuttle coming up from the Defiant.
Yeah, and that was kind of it for my secondary.
Okay, I love it. So I'm going to rattle off a bunch. The first I had my Voyager trifecta, which I mentioned projections before, which you picked. I had three that were basically exactly the same because they all had one big guest star and nothing else. Projections, Meld, and Worst Case Scenario. All bottle shows with just one big guest star. Haunting of Deck 12 really just had the kids and a few gaseous special effects. But
I almost had Worst Case Scenario on my list too, but Seska, and then there is some special effects. There's some split screens with Tom Paris and
good point. I forgot about the split screen stuff. That's actually a good point.
Again, though, I don't know how much that costs, but it's an effect.
Yeah, I mentioned we talked about Sarek before we started recording, Claire, which was close for me. Duet as well. Dramatist Persona was one of my close picks, but I'm just going to rattle off a few others that were Half a Life was really just basically. Cast a little bit of effects. Ethics was one that doesn't have a whole lot going on other than some cast and a few effects. Also Eye of the Needles, the same, only one from Voyager, only one guest cast and a few visual effects. Twisted just has effects. Counterpoint is actually one with extra cast and effects, so that's probably not one. But and then Similitude is one that I almost picked, but they really have a lot of effects in that one in terms of when they're in that nebula. So I didn't pick that.
I was actually Similitude might have been the number one pick that you both chose.
Yeah, it's close, but it's obviously got a guest actor and it has some effects, but. My special shout out, just to give him some credit, is the Mark of Gideon from TOS. Have to call that out. There's the whole show, obviously, is shot on the Enterprise, minus that one little Gideon council set, and then all those freaky heads and one guest actress. So when you dive deep, there's a lot that are really close, and you can probably justify, but. When you really peel the onion back, it's a little bit of a finite list, but awesome and fun topic. All right, let's jump into our regeneration cycle and wind this episode down.
Computer, activate regeneration cycle. Alcoves beta and gamma.
All right, let's do a quick recap of our picks. So Claire, rattle off your five picks.
All right, number five is Shades of Grey from TNG. Number four is Remember Me from TNG. Number three is The Menagerie, both parts from the original series. Number two is Facets from DS9. And number one is Shuttle Pod 1 from Enterprise.
Awesome. So you had two from TNG and then one each from TOS, Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise. Ken, how about you?
All right, my number five pick was Dramatis Persona from Deep Space Nine. My number 4 pick was Projections from Voyager. My number 3 pick was Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad from Star Trek Discovery. Number 2 was Remember Me from Next Generation. And number 1 was Observer Effect from Enterprise.
Awesome. So you literally had one from Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Discovery, TNG, and Enterprise. So TOS was your only one not reflected there. And I had The Changeling from TOS, Where Silence Has Lease from TNG, Time Squared from TNG, Parallels from TNG, and then also Observer Effect from Enterprise. So I had one from TOS, one from Enterprise, and 3 from TNG. I just couldn't get away from them. And we had 2 duplicate picks with Remember Me and Observer Effect. And our overall breakdown, we had representation from all 6 series, not the Kelvin timeline, obviously, but all 6 television series got represented. We had 1 pick from Discovery and Voyager, 2 picks from Deep Space Nine and TOS, 3 picks from Enterprise, which were all of our first round picks, and then 6 overall picks from TNG. So TNG leading the way on the bottle show concept. All right, as we do every week, we've once again entered a temporal causality loop. So before we can depart, it's time to hear from you.
Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop, and I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
This week, we're jumping back to episode 41 and one of our absolute favorite topics that we've ever done here. It's our top 5 coolest episode titles. And that topic, I think, is seriously peak Trek ranks. We love it. The feedback we got from everybody was amazing. And here are just a few of the standout picks, which is basically just me highlighting the deepest one-off picks from so many of our awesome contributors. And when I say contributors, I of course mean you, our listeners, because this podcast is all about our Trek conversation, you know, here and on Twitter. And we really appreciate you guys continuing to send in all these lists. It's great. So first up, from the amazing Jen S, who is at EDAC Quarks, and also from at John Fuchsius online, they both picked TNG's Silicon Avatars, one of their coolest titles. And I love that pick. It's not one that I had thought about. And Jen S also submitted an all Voyager list of picks as well. So she had Scorpion, Year of Hell, Bride of Chaotica, Infinite Regress, which is totally cool, and Course Oblivion. So we like that theme pick. And then got to give a shout out to Robert, who is at Pacer Commander on Twitter. He had Shadows of Pajem on his list, which is a fantastic deep cut, cool title pick. And our good friend Robert Reyes over at Promenade Podcast, at Promenade Pod, he had The Outrageous Akona on his list. So there's no way I wasn't going to mention that, because that is a cool title. And we love his red sweaters, right, Claire?
Yes. And his cat named Laverne.
And he has a cat named Laverne. I forgot about that. All right. And then our buddy Thad at Tyrannicus had a theme list as well. It was all numbers. He had the 7th from Enterprise, 1159 from Voyager, 1 from Voyager, the 37s from Voyager, and of course 11001001, which we did mention on the show, from TNG. So that was a cool list. And then we also had a few people pick The Haunting of Deck 12, which actually, now that I think about it, could have been on Thad's list as well. Trek versus Trek. So at Trek versus Trek, they picked that one as well. Did Catherine Robinson at The Sorceress, and then Trekkie Rob also picked it. Great pick. And then finally, going to give a shout out here to Ken, who also submitted an awesome list of top 5 coolest titles. One of them, which he picked tonight as well. And it had a theme that we did not think of when we were recording. And his list was an all Latin titles list with, see if I can get through this, Ex Post Facto, Si Vis Pacem, Parabellum, Inter Arma Enim, Silent Leges, Dramatis Personae, and Vox Sola.
So great job, Ken. We love that list, man.
Great pronunciation, Jim. I appreciate the effort.
Okay. Don't forget, Sub Rosa also belongs on that list.
That's right.
There's only five picks, Claire. Only five picks.
That was on his secondary system.
That's right.
How dare you slight the sex ghost?
All right. As always, that's more than enough to get us out of this week's temporal causality loop. So thanks again to everyone for all the great feedback. Keep those lists coming to me at Trek Rank so we can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you too. So put your own list together of top five bottle shows and give us a call. You can call us at 609-512-5527. That's 609-512-LLAP. So hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we are doing our top five wisest characters. Simple. Could be a regular character, could be a one-off character. And I'm really curious to see kind of what people come up with for this one. So Claire and Ken, who would you choose off the top of your head as one of your top five wisest characters? Claire.
My first thought had to be Q.
Is he that wise?
When he wants to be, yeah. Now, when he doesn't want to be, he's just a pain in the butt. He's.
I like it. It's a good pick. I think of him as more, he knows everything, but he's maybe not the wisest applying it. But you're right. When he
think about Tapestry Q or All Things Q or.
No, it's a good point. When he wants to be.
Starpoint Q, that's wise Q. That's not smart ass Q.
Yeah. No, it's a great, great point. Ken, how about you? Who's jumping into your head?
I'm going to have to give out a shout out to the old people from the waiting room in Sacred Ground.
That is a quick, deep cut pick. Those three old people are wise.
That's right. I mean, George Costanza's mom's in there, so we got to have something going for him.
Estelle Harris, she got a shout out on our recent top five Voyager guilty pleasure episode. So she is getting around here on Trek Ranks. We love it. That is an awesome pick. Oh, my God. All right. Before we wrap it up, a huge thanks to Claire Little and Ken Riley, both from the number one Trek resource on the internet, Trek Core. Thanks for coming back, guys, and playing with this tough topic. I hope you guys had fun.
Definitely.
Great. So always a great time with you, Jim.
Nerds. I love it. All right. Thanks for engaging with us here on episode 43 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Number one, have you never dreamed of climbing inside the bottle?
Sir?
The ship in the bottle. Model airships. I used to build them when I was a child. My God, and I bet I had a Promelian battle cruiser, too.
You ready to beam down to the vessel?
Locked onto the main bridge, Captain.
You're certain about the atmospheric conditions, Data?
There is adequate oxygen for life support, Commander.
It is exactly as they left it, Number One. In the bottle.
The ship in the bottle. Oh, good Lord. Didn't anybody here build ships in bottles when they were boys?
I did not play with toys.
I was never a boy.
I did, sir.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Proceed.
I did. I really did. Ships and bottles, it's great fun.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.
Because it is my birthday, I assumed that you or one of the others would try to mount an unexpected social gathering.
A surprise party? Mr. Worf, I hate surprise parties. I would never do that to you.
I am sorry, Commander.
Settle in. I'll meet you on the bridge.
Aye, sir.
Surprise parties.